for studying the muqaddimat in the sutuh, for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language, is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and as always, our guest speaker, Sheikh Javid. Let's talk about some of the questions and concepts about media, jurisprudentially speaking, of course, according to the rulings of Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, what is Ayatollah Khamenei's view, let's say, on watching satellite programs? Is it permissible for, people living in some neighboring provinces or border towns, for example?
Sure.
All right, to the other countries, let's say, to see and watch their television stations or programs?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Programs broadcast via Western satellite television stations and those of most of the neighboring countries teach, you know, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, teach misleading thoughts and they tend to misrepresent things. So misrepresentation is a common thing. They try to portray things which are not true as true and which are true as false. So that's part of the Western media or satellite television stations. They also contain, licentious, frivolous, a kind of forbidden, obscene music, vulgar music, which is also forbidden according to Islam, and watching such movies which contain music, haram music, and vulgar music songs, of course, leads to definitely to kind of mafsada or corruption or mischief or evil, whatever you term it. So it also, kind of misleading. People end up going astray watching such things and, committing haram acts.
Right.
So it's not permissible to access these channels to watch the programs they broadcast according to Ayatollah Khamenei. As I also mentioned, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, if you're watching, of course, let's say documentary, NA documentaries,
yes,
or things which are absolutely halal, essentially halal, like let's say watching Quranic competition broadcast by a neighboring country, let's say. So, and if you're confident that you will watch only halal things and
right,
there's no objection to you,
mm-hmm,
it is permissible, even though it's broadcast on a satellite channel.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Sheikh Javid, is there any jurisprudential problem in watching or listening to, you know, funny programs, comical, you know, programs and episodes broadcast from either the radio or television?
Well, there is no problem in listening to such programs and, let's say, humorous shows, mm-hmm, or watching them, provided that they do not involve insult to a believer, or they do not involve backbiting, or they do not involve some kind of degradation of someone. Because, you know, just as we sometimes see, it's very much very common that some, let's say, stand-up comedies are
pretty common.
Yeah, it's very common that some people are spoken, mm-hmm, ill of, and some people, other people are degraded, and, you know, some insult is thrown at some other people. Mm-hmm. So if such programs include insult to some, mm-hmm, people, it's,
yes,
not permissible to be a part of it, to watch it. Otherwise, it is permissible.
Mm. You talked about insult as a kind of, let's say, a standard or cornerstone to, make it somehow like objectionable, all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the thing is, what about the jokes, for example, in a stand-up comedy that they tell, especially, yes, these comedians tell, or in such satirical programs,
right,
or comical programs, and especially about the private parts or the sex. And that comes up a lot in these jokes.
Mm-hmm.
If some of these jokes are involved, then does it make it haram or objectionable?
Well, jokes are not forbidden per se. You know, you can crack jokes, you know. But, you know, depending on the impact and consequences, if those jokes are, let's say, sexual and, you know, and they kind of lead you,
yes,
to something haram, or maybe you might end up doing something haram because that's the consequence, mm-hmm, of cracking, mm-hmm, jokes, mm-hmm, with someone, jokes about sexuality or, you know, about private parts, of course, it is, it's not permissible. Mm-hmm.
I see. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
La ilaha illallah, wallahu akbar.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about the rules of media according to Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, is there any problem for women, for example, like kissing the photos of the late Imam Khomeini, or the martyrs, for example, in those Muslim countries where there has been a war, for example? Because they're basically the non-mahrams and they're still kissing, for example, a non-mahram's picture. Is it permissible for them to do so?
Well, generally speaking, the pictures of people do not have the same ruling of the people themselves. In other words, the rules which apply to the people themselves do not apply to the, mm-hmm, pictures.
Yes.
Of course, the pictures are printed on paper, and of course, there's no problem, and there's no objection to someone, to a woman, let's say, kissing the pictures of the martyrs as a mark or as a sign of respect or sign of love, and, you know, showing, let's say, dignity and respect for those noble people, for those martyrs, provided that, you know, no evil intention is harbored, for example. And it's if a person is confident that he will not fall into a sinful act as a result of, let's say, kissing the picture of a martyr, let's say, there's no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, you know, there we must differentiate between a picture and an individual himself.
I see. What about the pictures of semi-naked or naked women unknown to us? Like, as you can see, these movies or films, you know, these women appearing in different places here and there in some of the television series or programs and movies. If they are unknown to us, does it make it permissible to watch?
Well, generally speaking, like I said, watching movie, watching pictures and photographs, even if those pictures or photographs are moving pictures, does not have the same ruling as looking in reality at people who are non-mahram to you. They are totally different things, you know. So there is no objection to watching them, to seeing them, according to Islamic law and according to Islamic Sharia. And if, of course, it's very much necessary that watching them or seeing them is not done with lust or with evil intention, and it does not lead to a bad result or a bad consequence or to any mischief, fitna, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So since watching obscene pictures is inherently intertwined with looking with some kind of sexual urge,
mm-hmm.
urge with sexual, you know, excitation,
mm-hmm.
and it is a kind of precursor to committing haram acts, it is therefore haram, you know,
mm-hmm.
watching such movies, such pictures which are pictures of women who are partially naked,
mm-hmm.
is kind of, as I said, it's a kind of precursor to committing haram things.
I see.
Granite
so it's much better to avoid watching them, right?
Ayatollah Khamenei says it's therefore, it's based on this presumption, it is haram to watch such pictures.
Thank you very much. Esther.
In the event that you are confident that you will not fall and there is no such lustful intention,
mm-hmm.
there is no objection to you seeing them and watching them.
I appreciate it.
Thank you
very much for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Rahmanum Rahimun Mannanum Kareemun Salamun Aleemun Malajan
According to tracking service FlightAware, over Memorial Day weekend, there were more than 2,800 cancellations and 20,644 delays among US airlines. The experts see that as an early indicator of a turbulent summer travel season because of a pilot shortage, because of increased consumer demand and a recent rise in fuel prices, and disagreements over which COVID-19 restrictions should remain in place. We now present you an article written by Eric Berger. The piece is titled Pilot Shortages, Fuel Prices and COVID, US Braces for Travel Chaos. On Friday night, 10th of June, Laura Waring needed to fly from Newark, New Jersey to San Diego, California to help set up her healthcare information technology company's conference, which was scheduled to start in the coming days. But after her flight was repeatedly delayed and then cancelled, Laura Waring slept for about 45 minutes on a cot at Newark Airport before she woke up cold and uncertain how she would get to California. That was just the start of her troubles. And according to travel industry experts, Laura Waring's experience will likely not be unique among people flying in the coming months. According to tracking service FlightAware, over Memorial Day weekend, there were more than 2,800 cancellations and 20,644 delays among U.S. airlines. The experts see that as an early indicator of a turbulent summer travel season ahead because of a pilot shortage, because of increased consumer demand and a recent rise in fuel prices, and because of disagreements over which COVID-19 restrictions should remain in place. Matthew Howe, senior manager of travel intelligence at Morning Consult, a market research firm, said, "We're really seeing revenge travel. People having had 2 years of pent-up demand and wanting to go out and travel. On the flip side, I think we have seen that some airlines may be struggling to meet the demand." According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the number of airline pilots and engineers decreased from 84,520 in May of 2019 to 81,310 in May of 2021, an almost 4% decrease. And according to the Bureau, the country will need more than 14,000 new pilots each year for the next decade. The Regional Airline Association, a trade group, stated in its 2021 annual report, "Workforce shortages predating the pandemic have been accelerated, particularly for technicians and for pilots, who have long been entering the career in fewer numbers than those retiring." According to Michael Taylor, practice lead for travel intelligence at JD Power, a consumer research firm, the shortage means people seeking to travel this summer will likely face fewer options than before the pandemic. For example, before the pandemic, airlines may have had departures every hour for major hubs like Chicago and Atlanta, Georgia. He said now they will only happen every 90 minutes and the planes will be busier. Michael Taylor said the airlines are going to be redeploying a larger fleet with fewer city destinations in their flight system. Michael Taylor explained fewer flights and a shortage of staff translates into less slack in the system, whereas before the pandemic, an airline may have had crews at an airport on standby in case of an unexpected event. Airlines aren't doing that as much because they need those staff on flights. Then when a storm hits and delays a flight, there may not be substitutes for the scheduled crew members, who the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, only allows to fly a certain number of hours each day. Dennis Targer, a spokesperson for Allied Pilots Association, the union for American airline pilots, said the airline is loading up pilots' schedules to the absolute maximum. Tajer said, when you build a schedule with very little buffer because you have disproportionately assigned your pilots reserve duty, it's very expensive and it's very ineffective, and it ultimately leads to a less reliable operation. Airlines are adjusting to the new challenges. Delta Airlines announced on 26th of May that it would cancel 100 daily flights from 1st of July to 7th of August around the US and Latin America. Alison Orsband, Delta Airlines' Chief Customer Experience Officer, said in the announcement, more than any time in our history, the various factors currently impacting our operation, weather and air traffic control, vendor staffing, increased COVID case rates contributing to higher than planned unscheduled absences in some work groups, are resulting in an operation that isn't consistently up to the standards that Delta Airlines has set for the industry in recent years. Alicia Johnson, a 28-year-old mental health therapist, was scheduled to fly back to Detroit, Michigan from Minneapolis, Minnesota when her cousin's Memorial Day weekend wedding, when she received a notification on Sunday morning, 12th of June, that her Monday morning flight had been cancelled. She was rebooked for 1 3 hours later. Alicia Johnson, who lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, said, it just added stress to us having to rearrange transportation, but also having backup plans on what would happen if that one also got cancelled or if they overbooked it. She and her fiancé decided not to make the same trip with Delta Airlines for another wedding in July. It wasn't just because of the cancellation. Alicia Johnson also flew in April shortly after the federal government lifted its mask mandate for people on airlines. She continued to wear her face mask because of family members with autoimmune disorders. During the flight, she felt like the Delta airline crew was celebrating the end of the masking requirement. Taylor said, people still want people to wear face masks. You go to any airport and they have the overhead announcements, you should be wearing a mask. And you look around and about half the people are wearing masks. Alicia Johnson is not alone in having a disappointing travel experience. J.D. Power reported that customer satisfaction with air travel in March of 2022 had decreased from the same time a year earlier. Michael Taylor attributes that change to the increase in the number of passengers. He said, it's a great flight when you're on a 737 and there are only 10 people on it. When there are 220 people on it, that's a different experience. Alicia Johnson also saw the cost of her round-trip ticket to Minneapolis from $297 in May rise to $578 in July. According to the Airlines Reporting Corporation, the average U.S. round-trip ticket price in April was $585, which was the highest in 7 years. Matthew Howe of Morning Consult said, I think with tickets being as high as they are, with inflationary pressure hitting people's budgets, people are really expecting airlines to perform and deliver the services that they have promised. Waring, an executive sales coordinator with the healthcare IT company, was able to depart Newark, New Jersey on a United Airlines flight at 8:30 a.m. local time on 21st of May, 13 hours after she was supposed to leave. And the flight was for Los Angeles, California, rather than San Diego, California. Her luggage didn't make it on the flight. That meant she not only had to drive 2 hours to San Diego, but also had to visit a Target to buy clothes. And when she finally got her bag, the handle was broken. She kept the receipts from her purchases and hopes the airline will reimburse her. Waring, a 47-year-old who lives in Bud Lake, New Jersey, said fortunately they were still able to prepare for the conference, which went well. She is still planning on flying with United Airlines in August to Florida for a family vacation. Waring said the bad experience is definitely not going to keep me from booking a flight. Waring said that the bad experience is definitely not going to keep me from booking a flight, adding, I'm just going to make sure to have a good-sized carry-on that some essentials in there.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a shorter speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
هست که خداوند متعال به حضرت موسی فرمود که یا موسی یک موجودی رو که از خودت پست.
It is narrated that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala asked Prophet Moses to bring him a creature lower than himself. By such a request, Allah wanted to examine Moses a divine test. Prophet Moses obeyed and went out to find a human lower than himself in rank. However, wherever he looked, he couldn't find such a creature. He found all the people beneficial, including a farmer, a mother, and a kid.
کسی رو نتونست پیدا بکنه. بعد یه مرتبه یادش افتاد که خداوند متعال فرمود یه موجودی.
As a result, he couldn't find any human lower than himself in rank. Suddenly, he remembered that Allah asked him to bring a creature, so it could include animals too. Then, Prophet Moses looked at the animals around to find a useless animal, but he couldn't do so, because all the animals were useful for the surroundings too. All of a sudden, he saw a crippled, hairless, sick dog who was lying on the corner of a place. He thought to himself, this animal is the lowest of low in ranks, so let's take it to Allah. He was preparing to do so, that suddenly a kid brought a piece of bone to the dog, gave it to the dog, smiled and then left. The dog became happy and wagged his tail. Upon seeing such a scene, Prophet Moses understood that God created all creatures with uses, and all the creatures are useful in this world. Therefore, we must not see ourselves higher than others in this world. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة. The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently taking inspiration from the 16th sermon, where Imam Ali alayhi salam gives his governance program. And we reach this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about piety, and he says that those communities that have learnt the lessons from the past and are able to reflect those lessons in their present day life, they will be such that they will have piety in them, and that piety will stop them from entering into doubtful areas and confusing areas, and they will rather always be stuck to the right direction and the right path. So we're talking about piety, and we say that piety is not just sitting with a rosary and remembering God in the apparent sense and just praying or fasting and things like that, which are very important in their own sense, in their own right, but they have to be accompanied with the actual piety. And that actual piety, as we said in the previous session, is to be careful, to be sensitive, to be accurate, to have that kind of seriousness. And that is actually one dimension of piety.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We were talking about one dimension of piety, of the right form of piety, and that is that attention, that seriousness, that accuracy, that sensitivity and care that a person has to have. There is a narration from Imam alayhi salam, from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, where they were asked, what is taqwa? And he says that, أَنْ لَا يَفْقِدَكَ اللَّهُ حَيْثُ أَمَرَكَ وَلَا يَجِدَكَ حَيْثُ نَهَاكَ, means that piety is that Allah should not see you absent, should not find you absent in a place where He has commanded you to be, and He should not find you present in a place where He has avoided you to be there. In other words, this narration is telling you to be accurate, to be sensitive about the commandments of God, about where you are walking, about where you are traveling, about the direction you are taking in your life. Always to have that sensitivity, that care, that onlooking, to be always looking over yourself. And that is why we are always told to take muhasaba, to take account of your actions, to take account of your thoughts, to see where you are directing, where you are going, to see, to reevaluate some of your actions and some of your thoughts and some of your activities. And if a person is always careful in this way, then he will not, you know, fall asleep. Rather, he will not go into a state of oblivion. He will always have that state of wakefulness in the direction of the truth. This is what we call piety. If you get stuck somewhere where you know you're in the wrong direction, then ask for help so that you come out of that situation and be in the right state. Be sensitive, be careful. Look at where you're going, who you are working with, how you're working, what is your workplace. All of that, you need to be very, very careful about that. That is one dimension of piety that Imam Ali alayhi salam, also and other Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam have talked about.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We were talking about what is piety, and we discussed one dimension, which is the sensitiveness and care, and, you know, that state of wakefulness and always having that state of carefulness when dealing with your situation in life and where you are and what you do. Another dimension, which is a very important dimension, which is also the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam have talked to us about, is taqwa is to prepare a shield for yourself, to create a fence for yourself, such that other things, evil things, dark things, enemies who want to misguide you cannot penetrate through that fence. And this is the kind of that fence or that shield that if it comes, if it is there, if it is present with regards to the normal illnesses and sicknesses that we have in our day-to-day life, we call that vaccination. You know, we say vaccine. A person who is vaccinated from a certain illness means he has a shield within his existence that stops the viruses and bacteria to enter. Although the bacteria can enter, but they get destroyed, and a person is protected from that sickness. Piety is like that. It's to vaccinate yourself so that evil cannot affect you. The dark forces cannot affect you. The evil intentions of others do not destroy you and do not take you away from the right path. This is called spiritual vaccination. So piety is actually the spiritual vaccination that you need to have. And how do you get vaccinated in reality? That's the first dimension that I spoke about. That care, that attention, sensitivity that you create within yourself with time is what will actually vaccinate you and the society from misguidance and from destruction and from entering the path of, you know, deviation and doubtfulness. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He always keeps us in the state of piety so that we can achieve the purpose of our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
وبالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Rising costs in the U.S. have pushed American citizens to the edge with soaring inflation and the government's inability to control the matter so far. According to the Labor Department, the annual inflation rate rose to 8.6% in May, shattering any hope Americans might have had for relief from the skyrocketing inflation. With inflation hitting the highest rate since 1981, rising costs of living has been squeezing households and putting pressure on policymakers to bring the issue under control. In response to the issue, the U.S. Central Bank has since March been raising interest rates, but the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, which has driven up the price of oil and commodities like wheat as it disrupts exports from the two countries, has made tackling the problem more difficult. Polls show a majority of Americans see inflation as the top problem facing the country. Consumer sentiment has plunged and U.S. President Joe Biden's approval ratings have sunk as Republicans criticize him over the issue. But the U.S. government seems to be more concerned about the conflict in Ukraine, where it has so far given away billions of dollars in weaponry.
This definitely hurts the U.S. economy and Americans. The Biden administration's decision not to push for negotiations between Ukraine and Russia is, to many of us, inexplicable. It's irrational. It's certainly causing enormous carnage and tragedy in that region. And in addition, it's hurting the United States. You know, the average American, when we go to the gas pump these days, I live in California, I'm paying well over $6 per gallon. This is extremely difficult for many American families. So the Biden administration, I think, has been very unwise and damaging in the policies that have been pushed by Secretary of State Blinken and by Victoria Nuland, both of whom are basically neoconservatives.
The price of gasoline in the U.S. has also witnessed a record high, averaging more than $5 a gallon for the first time. Meanwhile, Biden's attempts of lowering prices, namely a record release of barrels from U.S. strategic reserves, waivers on rules for producing summer gasoline, and leaning on major OPEC countries to boost output, have so far proven to be ineffective.
Certainly, the Biden administration should have foreseen these extremely damaging and disturbing consequences. I think that perhaps their policies are driven by somehow, perhaps they think that seeming warlike will help them at the elections coming up very soon. The midterm elections in November are of great concern to the administration because Biden's approval rate is extremely low right now. So they're clearly taking actions that they hope will bolster the results of the election in favor of Democrats.
Saudi Arabia and several other OPEC countries have rebuffed requests by the U.S. to boost oil production beyond the gradual amount. This has led to U.S. lawmakers seeking alternatives to the oil cartel to solve their problems. So far, the U.S. Senate has passed a bill called No Oil Producing and Exporting Cartels Act of 2021. The bill, aside from creating complications for oil companies, is intended to protect consumers and businesses from spikes in costs of petroleum. But analysts warn that implementing it could have some dangerous unintended consequences. Many say the move could harm U.S. energy companies more as OPEC members produce oil much more cheaply than U.S. companies.
The Secretary General of the Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says the resistance would not remain silent in the face of the Israeli regime's efforts to plunder the country's maritime gas resources. Syed Hassan Nasrallah made the remark on Thursday after a vessel operated by a Greek company arrived at the Karish gas field in Lebanon's territorial waters to extract gas for the occupying regime. Nasrallah noted the enemy does not recognize the international law and resolutions, reminding that it was not the international regulations, but actually pressure, war of attrition, and resistance that forced the occupying enemy to retreat from the southern Lebanon and the Palestinian enclave of the Gaza Strip.
Hezbollah is part of the Lebanese government. They have MPs inside, and they can maybe adopt a resolution inside the parliament and then move forward with maybe attacking the Israeli vessels and, their workers or so on, to push them away from their resources and their land.
Hezbollah chief also said that the U.S. and Israel are seeking to afflict Lebanon with hunger and partition. Nasrallah said the Lebanese companies that have pioneered to extract the maritime area's resources have been threatened by the U.S. and Israel, warning that Washington and Tel Aviv were after shaving off a large part of the resource-rich area. Lebanon and Israel took part in indirect talks to discuss maritime demarcation in 2020. But they stalled after Lebanon demanded a larger area, including part of the Karish gas field, where Israel has given exploration rights to a Greek firm. The talks were supposed to discuss the Lebanese demand for 860 square kilometers of territory in the disputed maritime area, according to a map sent to the United Nations in 2011. However, Lebanon then said the map was based on erroneous calculations and demanded 1,430 square kilometers more further south, including part of Karish. Israel relies heavily on gas and has long been developing a number of illegal offshore gas deposits in the Mediterranean Sea. This is a particularly sensitive issue for Lebanon, which is dealing with fuel shortages amid a worsening economic crisis.
And I'm pretty sure Hezbollah is wise enough to do this with coordination with other political parties inside Lebanon. Hezbollah does not want to control the country and does not want to push the country towards war, but they want to secure their sovereignty, they want to secure their resources, and they want to keep the country a safe country. And Hezbollah has been proven, with all these years, all their sacrifices and their actions. They're a very credible organization inside Lebanon and a political party that has a lot of good allies. And I think that this is a great opportunity, hopefully, to be able to get some more financial support for the Lebanese nation.
Hezbollah says it has the material and military capabilities that enable it to prevent Israel's gas extraction from Karish. The Hezbollah Secretary General has cautioned the Israeli regime against seeking another war on Lebanon, saying the regime's losses would be greater than those of Lebanon in the event of such military confrontation. This is not the first time the regime has sought to encroach on a nation's sovereign territory, but this time, the response it would receive could be unprecedented.
The US and its Western allies have pushed ahead with the anti-Iran hysteria at the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna. The UN nuclear watchdog's 35-nation board of governors overwhelmingly passed a resolution criticizing Iran for failing to explain uranium traces found at three undeclared sites. The resolution rebuked Iran for what it has described as Tehran's failure to answer questions on alleged uranium traces at undeclared sites. It also accuses Iran of insufficient cooperation with the agency. The resolution excludes a recommendation to refer Iran's case to the UN Security Council, a move that would significantly escalate tensions and likely sink the ongoing talks to revive the 2015 agreement. The resolution against Iran is said to have stemmed from information within two quarterly reports on the country's nuclear activities that were circulated amongst board members last week. Iran insisted it had declared all sites which hosted past nuclear activities. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, Mohammad Islami, said Iran has no hidden or undocumented nuclear activities or undisclosed sites.
One of the main things to understand here is that the IAEA as an institution is meant to be, exactly as you said, a technical one. But now it is being used as a vehicle for political purposes in order to pressure Iran, in order to continue the maximum pressure campaign that the Trump administration wanted with the support of Israel to isolate Iran.
These fake documents seek to maintain maximum pressure on Iran. The Israeli regime has openly called on the nuclear watchdog to censure Iran's nuclear program. In brazen remarks to the Knesset, the regime's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said Israel expected the IAEA's Board of Governors to strongly condemn Iran and make sure it will pay a heavy price.
So what we are seeing now is a campaign led by the United States, by Israel, and by European partners who promised that they would uphold the JCPOA and respect Iran and respect the deal and want to push America back into the deal. They are now turning around at the Board of Governors of the IAEA and pursuing this really regrettable, unfortunate, and downright dishonorable policy.
In response to the IAEA's unconstructive approach, Iranian officials have now decided to remove two surveillance cameras of the International Atomic Energy Agency from one of its nuclear sites.
And Iran now, we know in the news, is saying that they will not, if the IAEA wants to do these kind of actions, Iran will reconsider its relationship with the IAEA. And I think it is well within its right to do so.
Tehran says the two cameras had been installed voluntarily and beyond the safeguard obligations of the IAEA. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, has hit back at the accusations, saying Tehran has given accurate answers to questions posed by the IAEA, but the agency bases its reports on the information provided by the enemies of Iran. Iran had earlier warned against the consequence of the unconstructive move by the U.S. and Europeans to disrupt negotiations to salvage the multilateral deal, officially known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. Iran has warned that it would give appropriate response to hostile moves.
Israel is the main provocateur of this current situation. The Zionist regime is dedicated to seeing a war. With Iran. They see it almost as a holy duty. And it's not only extremely dangerous and reckless, but it shows the rogue nature of the Zionist state and of its backers in Washington.
The resolution comes as a pause in the Vienna process entered its third month. Tehran blames the U.S. and its allies, France, Britain and Germany, for failing to act constructively during the talks. Under the JCPOA, Iran accepted certain caps on its nuclear program in exchange for the removal of international sanctions. The U.S., however, unilaterally abandoned the deal in 2018 and reimposed sweeping sanctions despite Tehran's full compliance with its share of obligations.
Since July 2015, when the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action came into existence, Iran's nuclear program has been open to inspections described as unprecedented in the history of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Under that agreement, Tehran voluntarily agreed to grant international inspectors easy access to its atomic sites well beyond its IAEA obligations. The agency was also allowed to install many more surveillance cameras at Iranian sites. The IAEA's inspections in Iran account for over a quarter of all agencies' monitoring activity around the world. Despite the close cooperation, the International Atomic Energy Agency is once again accusing Iran of failing to cooperate. This week, the IAEA's Board of Governors passed a resolution critical of Iran. The resolution was sponsored by the United States, Britain, France, and Germany. The agency says it is not satisfied with the answers Iran has provided to its probes of three sites. The resolution has been described as a blow to the stalled talks between Iran and the P4+1 group to revive the moribund 2015 deal. The IAEA resolution criticizing Iran was passed amid an intensified Israeli lobbying campaign to derail diplomacy with Iran. Israel is a sworn enemy of the hard-earned 2015 deal and makes no secret of its efforts to destroy it completely. The IAEA's Board of Governors passed its latest resolution just days after IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi visited Israel. Iran is also highly critical of the IAEA for failing to even raise the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons program during Grossi's recent visit. The atomic agency's credibility and impartiality are on the line as it seems to be yielding to pressure by nuclear-armed Israel to mount pressure on Iran.
But I do agree that Iran has good reason to be angry with the resolution, because it is an extension of the one rule for us and a different rule for you approach that's been taken by the IAEA with respect to Iran from the beginning of this entire issue. Iran has the right to develop nuclear technology. Iran has complied with inspections. And what appears to be the case here is that Israel and the United States are together attempting to restrict Iran's development as a nuclear power.
After years of unprecedented inspections in its nuclear sites, the Iranian government seems to be outraged by the IAEA's censure. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi pledged that such measures will never force Iran to back down from its rights. Meanwhile, head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, says it is unfortunate that the IAEA is being exploited by an illegitimate regime. He demanded the agency put a stop to infiltration by Iran's enemies in its operations. As tensions between Iran and the agency soared this week, Tehran informed the International Atomic Energy Agency that it is disconnecting over 2